from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft was officially charged yesterday for soliciting prostitution at a Florida massage parlor that was the focus of a wide-reaching human trafficking operation. At 9, we talk about what's being done in the Bay Area to stop illicit massage businesses. Then at 9:30, we'll talk about the Oakland teacher strike as it enters its fourth day, and we'll get an update on the strike and negotiations, and talk about why California schools are chronically underfunded and what the state can do about it. It's coming up next after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, Florida prosecutors officially charged New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft with two counts soliciting prostitution at a local spa tied to an international human trafficking ring. Kraft's arrest and those of scores of other men was part of an ongoing investigation in Florida and New York into illegal massage parlors that employ trafficked immigrant women who are forced to perform sex acts for clients. In this segment, we're going to look at the case and the state of the illicit massage industry in the Bay Area and what's being done to crack down on it. Joining us here in studio is Charmaine Bach. She's Assistant District Attorney and Head of the Human Exploitation and Trafficking Unit for Alameda County. She's also co-author of California's Human Trafficking Law, which passed back in 2012. And welcome back to Forum.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you with us. And let's begin by just talking about how prevalent this is, because there was a Polaris report that was put out about a year ago, and it named 3,300 massage businesses that are fronts for brothels. This is throughout the United States. There's great prevalence here in the Bay Area, probably many more, though, because a lot of this activity, especially with transnationals and maybe organized crime even behind it, syndicates, is in residences.
Correct. I mean, the Polaris report focused on the illicit massage businesses and identified about 9,000 businesses nationally with about a $2.5 billion annual revenue. But
so that's 3,300 here in the Bay Area, then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And but the real issue is that they're now focusing and shifting away from identified businesses that could be targeted to these residential brothels. And so we're really having to reach out to apartment managers and property owners to say, hey, these are the things you need to look for
that
are happening in your community.
Legitimate massage places get a bad name because of this activity, which is pretty prevalent and rife, not only, as we said, here in the Bay Area, but across the United States. And in the Bay, there are cultural differences, though. I mean, a lot of these massage parlors and a lot of these residences are essentially those who are working there, who are trafficked there, are from Asian countries or from south of the border. But the Polaris report said 84% are Americans who are being trafficked. And these are young girls and young transgender people, and what, between ages 12 and 14, in fact, they're starting out.
Well, that's exactly right. And those statistics in terms of the age of entry into these fields holds equally true for street-level trafficking, where the age of entry is anywhere from 11 to 14.
For boys as well, I should say. And
yes.
We're talking about really what to do and what can be done. I mean, in residential areas, neighbors can be on watch, of course. But in terms of the parlors themselves, what do you suggest?
Well, I mean, I think it's
because, excuse me, there are many challenges, right? You go into some of these places and you don't know who's running things. You don't know who the owner is.
Correct. Well, I mean, I think the question is, what can you do in terms of who? So if you're a community member, what can you do? I think a national model in terms of what to do is one started by DA Nancy O'Malley in Alameda County, which is the Heat Watch program. And Heat Watch is modeled after Neighborhood Watch. And it's really about see something, say something. So be attuned to what's happening either in the businesses that you frequent or walk past, or in your communities where there's, you know, residences. They don't have to be apartments. They could be townhouses, homes, whatever. Keep your eyes open. Look for, let's say, increased foot traffic. Look for increased male foot traffic. And similarly, if you know that massages are offered, do you ever see the girls coming out there? Do you see the girls outside having a cigarette? Do you see them getting on the bus? Do you see them coming back with shopping bags from Nordstrom's? Or really, is there just absolutely no sighting of any female entity outside of that business? And these are sort of the signs and symbols of what you look for. Now, if you're law enforcement, you go in. They look for if there's signs that people are living there. And they look at, you know, who's on the lease, who owns the property. And then really it's a question of doing surveillance. And there's many different strategies. Some strategies are harm reduction strategies where you go in, let's say, with administrative code compliance saying, do you have the appropriate massage certificate on the wall? And then they shut down the establishment if codes are not complied with. Other strategies are they send officers in to do undercover stings where they have sex with the girls and then they arrest the girls. Now, we're really much more victim-centered and trauma-informed, recognizing that arresting people who are being themselves victimized is really not the way to go. So that's not an approach that I think, I mean, few take that approach.
Do we need more social services for these victims?
Exactly, exactly. So we really believe in linking services and wrapping around services. But we need to recognize that many of these women that come, or young girls, young women, are afraid. And they're...
Many of them don't have citizenship or even any visa or anything at all, right?
But even if they... I mean, there is visa support. There is lots of immigration support. There's many people out there providing great free legal aid. And there's a lot of programs, including we have good programs to help. But they still have been so brainwashed and they're so fearful and they see their traffickers as so all-powerful that they don't want to do anything that could harm them or their families. They won't have their visas. Many of them have... arrived with a debt already, so they're in a debt bondage. And perhaps their mother thought that they were sending their daughter off to a really great life in America and leveraged their rice paddy, let's say, in China. So there's so many strings attached to their presence here. And so many judgments are made by us as a society, thinking that they're there voluntarily, that it's a consensual operation. You know, many say, like, how do you target the buyers? Do you shame them into what they're doing? And I think that the studies show that really shame doesn't get you there, but it's much more education to say, look, these people really aren't doing this freely. Like, nobody grows up thinking that that's what they're going to do as an occupation, that it's a good one.
Although I think it was at Fresno, they said the problem is with demand, so let's do a sting and let's get the Johns.
Well, I think that's exactly what needs to be done. And we do that in Alameda County from a multifaceted approach. We stop the cars as they're leaving, right? That's one way. So the Johns get arrested. We don't use the word John, but the purchasers, right? My boss's husband's called John. And I think John
really... I can understand. Bathrooms are called Johns, too. There's just too much Johns.
It kind of makes anonymous the person that's doing the purchasing. And we really need to put them out there up front and out there so that it's a deterrent. And then I think we also need to make sure that we're culturally sensitive in the response. As you pointed out, Michael, that some are Latina brothels, some are Asian brothels. And when you look at, let's say, just take Asian brothels. Law enforcement knows, let's say, they're Chinese, but you don't know what dialect they're speaking. So it creates a huge barrier in terms of providing, do you have a Mandarin interpreter? Do you have a Cantonese interpreter? And then recognizing, as some NGOs do, nonprofits do, that you need to be culturally sensitive in the sense of recognizing they're from a communist country. So they don't like to be singled out. They don't like, they want to all be treated the same. And so you've really got to be very aware of how you approach victims to give them the support they need.
We're talking to Charmaine Bach, and she's, again, Assistant District Attorney, head of the Human Exploitation and Trafficking Unit in Alameda County and the District Attorney's Office there, and also is co-author of Prop 35, California's Human Trafficking Law, which passed back in 2012. If you have a question about what we're talking about here, which is essentially sex trafficking, which persists here in the Bay Area, massage parlors and the like, but also in residences and a lot of this discussion was certainly the catalyst to it was the arrest of Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots. And that was pretty much, appears to be at this point, organized crime. And here in the Bay Area, there was, Hilario Martinez, who was an advertising pimp and was There was a regional effort to bring him to justice. Pittsburgh, Antioch, Concord, Martinez, and I think it was Louise Reeves who was in Contra Costa County. Now is
with
you
us.
In Alameda. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what should be done, what ought to be done, and what can be done? All those things we're exploring with our guest, Charmaine Bach. And if you have something you'd like to say or ask, now would be the time to join us. Our toll-free number is available, and the number to call is 866-733-6786. You can join the program now with any questions or comments by dialing in toll-free at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and you can post whatever is on your mind there. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. How many massage businesses are actually involved in sex trafficking? Do we have any estimates of that?
No, you know, it's really, I think that I'm leery of the statistics because they're rarely accurate, and they don't ever fully capture the extent and depth of it because there's not a lot of self-reporting that's going on, right? This is really hidden in plain sight. And so the numbers, I think, largely underestimate the scope of the issue. And that's even magnified. I think the problems there in terms of quantifying it are magnified by the breadth of the issue. I mean, frankly, when I started doing the brothel work, I thought that it was just sort of a one-off or a two-off, that maybe one or two were connected. I didn't even think that it would be traced all the way back to China. And then when we started to approach it as a business model, sort of like the Al Capone method, and looking at it...
Well, you're talking about organized crime here, aren't you?
Right, exactly. But looking at it not just in terms of the illicit sexual activity that's going on there, but also looking at it in terms of the let's say, failure to withhold... payroll tax and money laundering. I mean, there's lots and lots of money that is moved through. And it's not just simply stuffing money under a mattress. It's a far more sophisticated enterprise. There's the brothels that we're seeing up here are connected to the ones in Los Angeles and connected to the ones in San Diego. And there's actually drivers that drive the girls around, which creates a whole different problem because once you've identified who your victims are, then they're moved.
So we have no borders in this business, really.
We have, yes. Human trafficking knows no borders.
And there's also, I think it's important to point out that Polaris, which I've alluded to a couple times, a pretty thorough report that came out about a year ago, said that Santa Clara County has the third highest illegal massage parlors in the United States. And California accounts, of course, for a pretty strong proportion, as we heard before. Let's find out what's on your mind with this. And we'll start out with Guillermo. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my phone call. So my question is, do you have any data of the individuals who are seeking the service of these young people? And if you have that data, it will be easy to identify. For example, let's say that I see a group of men coming out of the certain building where they just maybe they're hanging up about reading a book or playing cards or whatever, something else, and you missed identified because the age.
Guillermo, thank you for that question. Is there a profile, I think, is really what he wants to know here, Charmaine?
You know, I don't think there really is. I think that this can happen to anybody's child, and also anybody's father, husband, brother can do it. I was asked to go to Oahu to help Honolulu shut down their first massage parlor ever. And a few things struck me. One, in terms of the street-level trafficking that we saw there, I expected to see Polynesian girls, and I saw young black girls from Oakland because we were so busy at TSA checking for water that nobody checked to find out about the connection between the child and the adult going through the metal detector. Then when we went to the massage parlors, I mean, there was a gentleman there with a Brooks Brothers suit, no tie, you know, shirt unbuttoned, probably saying, honey, I'm just going to run down to the bar for a drink. And you get... You get people who are coming after work or before work to get sexual services. There really is no socioeconomic class. There is no category. As we can see from look at that's a perfect example what just happened with Kraft, because really you'd expect that somebody who is the owner of the Patriots would have like primo access to massage therapy, right? I mean, the best chiropractors and physical therapists probably work for the Patriots, right? And yet, where does he go? He goes to a strip mall. So I think his entrapment defense is going to be is a hard-pressed one, because I personally would much rather go to the therapist that goes to the Patriots.
Let me bring another caller aboard here. Amelia joins us from Oakland. Amelia, welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about, well, there's a lot of emphasis on how there's women coming from abroad as victims of sex trafficking. There is also, as the guest mentioned, women, girls, who are black and brown, who are victims of sex trafficking, often because they're trapped in abusive relationships. And, I mean, Oakland is quite the mecca of child sex trafficking. And, you know, it's damaging not to talk about black and brown women who are trafficked that way. And I also want to bring up that FOSTA and SESTA are legislations that are damaging for sex workers because they're no longer able to advertise online, and they're also the eyes and ears of their community who can see when there's obviously something wrong going on. And, you know, if we imagine a world where sex work is legal, there is no need for men to go to massage parlors and use women who are in sexual slavery.
Hey, Amelia, you're bringing up two important points. Nobody meant, I don't think, to exclude the fact that young black and brown girls are indeed exploited. And I think Charmaine alluded to that, mentioning Honolulu or in
right.
Hawaii. And that's clear, especially here in the Bay Area with Oakland, as she suggested. But get to her second point about advertising. I mean, I remember covering the whole Craigslist I'll call it a scandal, for lack of a better word, all the advertising that went on in Craigslist. We had Craig Newmark in here in studio talking about it. And she's saying if it were allowed, maybe we'd have a different kind of world.
I think that there's different views on this point. And I was teaching, actually, a course at UCLA with the head of human trafficking from the Netherlands. And you think about Amsterdam and all that. And
right there on the windows.
Right there on the window. And the irony is that though it looks like it's consensual and voluntary and there's no coercion and everyone's being respected and no one's being exploited, actually the contrary is true. And they have a very high rate of trafficking there. They have an ability to capture that data because of their sort of computer systems that we don't have here in the United States. But there was video footage of the street where you walk down and you see the girls behind the glass, you know, prancing about, and you can go in and buy them, right? And it's all, quote, legal. And then at the end of the day, you see this Mercedes pull up and these men get out of the Mercedes and literally create a path for the women to go nowhere but from the door of that business into the Mercedes. And so, and we've also seen, since we've seen the decriminalization of children being sold for sex. In other words, if you are a child soliciting a sex act, let's say on behalf of your trafficker, you can no longer be arrested in California. Actually, Nancy O'Malley was the only DA in the state to back that legislation up, SB 1322. And that's really changed the landscape in terms of, you know, how people are looking at the children that are being sold as just victims and not criminalizing them in any way. That said, we've seen an uptick in the heat unit of violence against adult sex workers. And it's,
well, the thing about especially the exploitation of children is this is such a extraordinarily big business. I mean, we mentioned organized crime and so forth.
Right.
It's a lot easier to smuggle children, frankly, than it is to smuggle drugs. And there are great advantages to it in terms of not being caught.
Right. Well, I think to your caller's point, and I think her name was Laura, and I just want to say this to you, Laura, this show is talking about massage parlors and brothels, which is why we're really not talking in as much detail about the sex trafficking that occurs on the street. But that said, we are the epicenter. We just D.A. O'Malley just did a billboard campaign in partnership with Clear Channel. And our big billboard says the Bay Area is a hotspot for child sex trafficking. And it truly is. And there is no greater bang for your buck than selling a child for sex. There is no overhead. You have, let's say, five girls in your stable. Each girl has a $500 a day quota. And you do the math on that, and Polaris estimated that One trafficker with five girls tax-free annually makes about $500,000, $500,000 a year. And then you look at these children. These are broken children. These are forgotten children. These are children that many people just drive right past on the street. And these are children who are looking for love, and love in all the wrong places. In our schools, we teach what English, math, and science are, but we don't teach what love looks like. So they think maybe to get the McDonald's number four Happy Meal with their trafficker and have a semblance of family at the end of the day, they need to service 15 men during the course of that day, yes. Rain or shine.
Heartbreaking stuff. Mm-hmm. Let me bring some more of our callers on here, and let me go to San Jose. And Marjorie, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for this presentation. It's very interesting. I have two kind of observations / questions. One is that I read that in Sweden, the country of Sweden, they had a huge reduction in human trafficking by focusing solely on the purchasers. None of the people doing the sex acts are arrested. The second thing was kind of a slippery slope. I've personally known people who worked in massage, and people also college students who are doing like a lot of phone sex, like people you would never imagine would just do phone sex. They're just doing it because it's normalized, because it's accessible, because it's okay. And there's this kind of slippery slope thing. And this is a huge concern to me. And I think it's related to what you were saying about kids learning in school. You know, what about just protecting yourself? So those are, what do you think about this social connection, the slippery slope, the way we make it okay to kind of slide into sexual favors for money?
I think that's a really, really good question. And there are a couple of things that you're bringing up. One, I think part of what perpetuates this problem in the first place is what I call sort of the myth of the scarlet letter, where our society places a premium on being chaste. And so if you're sexually active as a woman or as a young girl, you're not credible, you're not believed, you're dismissed, you're called a slut. I mean, there's all sorts of shaming that occurs around that. Whereas if you're a man, you're Don Juan, you're cool, you're the president. And speaking of the president, you know, while I have great respect for the president that was in the office at the time that some sex acts occurred, I have to say that I really think it changed how people look, how the young look at oral sex as not sex. I mean, he was proclaiming as our sort of role model leader that was not, I did not have sex, that was not sex. And so it's very interesting in terms of what's happening surrounding oral sex and sex as a result of.
But phone sex, you know, there's no coercion involved. In many respects, when she calls that a slippery slope, it seems to me that it's in a different category altogether. I don't know how you feel about that, but could I get your comment on that? And maybe as we come to the end of the segment, and what she asked about Sweden, did we learn anything from Sweden?
You know, let me just talk about Sweden for a minute. I absolutely think that we've learned a lot about Sweden. And in fact, we're really committed to going after demand. We work with organizations such as No Traffic Ahead to target the Super Bowls. And I've gone to Atlanta to talk to the legislators there to help them draft their laws so that they can target the conference people that come to try to have a law that more reflects reality so we can actually get the people that are buying the sex. And in terms of what was
slippery
the
slope?
The slippery slope. Well, yeah, you know, hey, different strokes for different folks. What can I say? But I think that at the end of the day, it's really what is the value we place on the human, on the human female body? And are we objectifying it? Are we demonizing it? Are we dismissing
it? That's a subject for a whole other day.
Yes, it is.
Charmaine, thank you for joining us. That's Charmaine Bach again from the Alameda County District Attorney's Office. And when we return, we're going to update you on the Oakland teacher strike. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.